Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Well, hello and welcome to, or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure to be with you. Not sure that it's actually recording because it's sounding funny in the headphones here. So thank you for hanging on. We had some technical challenges due to my computer, not due to Blog Talk. So thanks for those of you who've been waiting. Tonight's topic, we're continuing our series on back to school or school success. Tonight, we're focusing on test preparation and some strategies beyond just reading the book and your notes over and over, which unfortunately what a lot of students do. So whether for yourself or the children in your life, we are going to move down the road of strategies to prepare for test more effectively than what most of our students are doing. And unfortunately, learning strategies and learning skills are not taught in classes, and teachers have different expectations around what's involved. Some of the materials for tonight is coming from the SOAR Study Skills Program by Susan Kruger. Some of the information will come from the SOS, Learning Strategies, Strengthening Our Skills Program by Dr. Lynn O'Brien. And some are coming from many of the teachers and mentors that I've had over the years as well. So if you're following the series and taking advantage of some of the information, thinking about tonight, we're going to start with the test prep from the time that you are reading your textbooks. Because textbooks have great organizational cues around what's important that, again, most students are not aware of. And if you read the foreword or the prologue, get a sense of where the author is coming from. Also taking a look at how the book is organized so you know what's included. And very often the authors of the book will have a section at the beginning for how to get the most out of the book. Funny about how that works. So taking a look at the use of things like bold, print, or type, questions, where they're located. So think about why you're reading what you're reading. Having a purpose to read really helps you to focus on what you're reading. It's priming your brain, as Susan calls it. So one of the best ways to do that is to look through the objectives at the front of the chapter, which tell you these are things, the important pieces of information you should know when you're done reading. That's clue number one, will likely be on the test. You want to then read the summary of the chapter, which summarizes the key points, should reflect the objective. And then often at the end of each bold heading section of a chapter, there are several questions. Read the questions before you read the information. That primes your brain to look for the answers. And if you can jot some notes as you're reading. Oh, by the way, skim the chapter and look at the pictures and graphs. So if you can get an idea of what they're for, how they're organized, that gives you, again, some things to read for. Now, here are the steps in Susan's book for priming your brain. And again, this helps you prepare for a test because you'll remember what you're reading more effectively. So she suggests starting with the pictures and graphs. Then the questions at the end of the chapter. Just by looking at those graphs and pictures, you may have some answers already. Then she has step three to begin reading the text and turn the headings into questions. And she suggests reading the book before the teacher covers it in a class because it gives you some background knowledge, because you have some structure that her information or his information will fill into. It'll allow you to ask questions to connect the reading to what you're learning. And, again, you'll make the learning stickier because you have a framework. I like the idea of reading that summary first. That's from a model called SQ3R, Summary, Question, Read, Recite, Review. So summary first, questions, read the section, recite answers to the questions, and then before the test you enter review again. Step four in Susan's Priming Your Brain is to review, answer the questions at the end of the chapter. And she said, if you're required to answer, try to include drawing symbols or other visuals to help you remember better. And if the questions were not assigned, you don't need to write out the answers, although writing might increase your ability to remember a bit. You'll benefit from at least imagining a visual picture for each answer. So those are the four steps she does to help you read faster and with greater understanding and recall. And she said once you get used to this method, it should only take about 5 additional minutes to do those strategies when you're reading, but it increases your results immensely. And for the why does it work? She points out that every step in the process encourages your brain to make connections with the material you're reading. Making those connections is what makes memory sticky. So you can become a quicker reader. Then you can learn it when you read it for the first time rather than having to study, relearn, and memorize again later. So how you read the textbook makes a difference in terms of your test preparation because you learn it more effectively the first time through. Secondly, let's talk about how your note-taking can prepare you for taking a test. And there are several different strategies around note-taking. And the important thing is that your notes need to make sense to you first and foremost, not to anybody else, not to your teacher, not to your friends, but to you, so that you know what those important pieces of information are. So in the SOS program, there are several methods that are covered. One of them is mind mapping, and this is a kind of graphic note-taking that involves images more than words, uses at least 3 colors, and there's 1 idea per line when you make this map. So you have a visual web of information. You've got different colors, which will help utilize more of your brain to create the memory, and pictures. Pictures plus words involve more of your brain. So when you are taking notes, just copying what the teacher writes is one way to take notes. However, let's make them make sense to you and learn how to figure out the important information. So, in the future show segment, we'll talk about listening and how to listen for keywords when you're note-taking. for today. Thinking about, again, how you can use your notes to prep for a test. First of all, you need to take your notes in an effective way. If you've read that material before the teacher talks about it in class, even if it's the pictures and visuals, again, you've got some background information. And this is a note from Susan's book that I want to be sure to share with you. And she says, when you read your text before class and prime your brain while taking notes, the time needed to study for tests will instantly be cut by 50% or more. So one of the ways you prime your brain when you're taking notes, or another way I should say, in addition to reading the text beforehand, if you don't read it beforehand, have your textbook open when you're taking notes. You can look at the pictures, graphs, and other information connected to what the teacher's talking about. Helps you stay focused with your attention, helps you learn and remember more quickly because you're connecting it to those visual images. Another way to prime your brain is to ask yourself, how does this information relate to the main topic? Again, it helps you connect and make sense about what you're hearing from the teacher. So it doesn't take a lot of extra time. It makes a big difference. So when you're taking your notes, in addition to priming your brain, there's a method called the Cornell method of note-taking, which is to draw a line down your page so that you have one-third of your page on the left-hand side and two-thirds of the page on the right-hand side. And this Cornell method was developed at Cornell University. And you take notes on the right-hand side of that line, and then the space on the left-hand side is to go back and add questions that are answered by the notes on the right-hand side of the page. So now you've created a study guide. You simply fold the page so all you see are the questions. Or you can cover up the answers on the right-hand side, ask yourself the question, say or write the answer, and then slide down and check. When you study, prepare for a test, like you're taking the test, you'll do better. Because when you take a test, you aren't reading the answers. When you take a test, you're answering questions. So by taking your notes in a method that allows you to insert questions, you're now preparing or studying for the test in a way that matches or mirrors the test process. And it allows you to interact with the information at a higher level of thinking than just simply reading over and over and hoping it sticks. And if you have some challenges coming up with a question, you could always check with your teacher. Now, in Susan Kruger's model, she suggests keeping the back of those notebook pages blank to add additional information, charts, symbols, and to give yourself space to add information later. She says there are better ways to save trees than squishing your notes so closely that you can't read them or add information later. Now, so you have the Cornell method of note-taking. We have the mind mapping method of note-taking. Either one of those is worth a try. Definitely add color to your notes, whether it's a highlighter or use colored pens if you can. I know some schools, the teachers require you only write in blue or black ink. And if that's the case, what I suggested when I've coached students in the past is to then recopy your notes in the colors that you like or on colored paper you like. In some places you have to use white paper. Well, you can also get purple paper, yellow paper, pink paper. So if you like purple paper, take your notes on purple. So add the color, that color grounding, especially in the color you like, also helps you to focus your attention longer. So let's talk about once you've taken those notes, what can you do to use them effectively? First of all, you want to look at your notes, review your notes within 24 hours of class. And I share this when I train adults as well, because up to 80% of what you learn in a training session in a class is gone within 24 hours unless you revisit it. It strengthens the connection in your brain. So review the new notes within 24 hours and then 7 days and then 30 days. And that's just about the timing for a pop quiz, chapter test, and a unit test in many cases. So 24 hours, 7 days, all your notes up to that point, and 30 days, which will help when you get to semester test time. And if you've taken your notes either in a mind mapping format or in the Cornell method with the questions, reviewing is just going through the questions. And then you can put a check mark by those that, hey, I got this, I'm all over this. And the star by the ones you need to review or study, or highlight the ones, the key points that you want to review, or make them into flashcards or cue cards to study the ones that you missed. Because here's a challenge, ladies and gentlemen. We spend so much time staring at and studying information we already know rather than focusing our time on ways to learn and remember the things that we don't know. So when you go through the notes and you can say, oh, got that, I know that, then focus on how can I remember the things I don't know. So in studying those notes, first review within 24 hours. You can add color, add pictures. Secondly, record the information you remember from class that maybe you didn't write down. Third, create the questions that summarize note points. And fourth, review your notes by reading them out loud. When you read silently, you only process visually. When you read out loud, you get through the visual of reading for your mouth, the muscle movement, the kinesthetic, tactile moving, and hearing. So you're getting it in multiple modalities into your brain. So now you've got three different ways that it's going in rather than just seeing it. And that enhances your ability to bring that memory back out again. There are other ways that you can use graphic organizers. And if you go to www.soar.com, there are free resources available there on note-taking that you can take advantage of. She also has some tips for studying math notes to prepare for a math test. So what does it mean to study for a math test? Let's take a look at what Susan Kruger suggests, and then we'll also talk about I taught junior high math. And by the way, if a teacher gives you a review sheet, so that's a good idea. Take a look at that. Not next week, but in our next segment of this series, we'll talk about actual test-taking strategies to help you perform better when you take the test. So right now, let's talk about studying your math notes, studying for a math test. And in math, it's not about memorizing facts. There are vocabulary terms possibly, maybe some sample problems to look at in the book. So one of the best ways to prepare for a math test is to do the homework, do the practice problems, and learn from mistakes so that what you've missed, you go back and you redo it to get the correct answer. So you practice doing it correctly. Often when students make mistakes on their homework, they don't fix it. They leave it done incorrectly, which then is challenging when it comes time to prepare for a test. So think about when you're doing your homework, making sure you have the page numbers on the page, the problem numbers, that you show your work. Because when you show your work, it's easier to identify where mistakes are made. If there's something, if there's a problem in your homework that you're not sure about, go back to the examples in the book to see if you can figure it out from the example. If not, when you're doing your homework, skip that problem, go to the next one. And if there are problems you cannot answer, Make sure you mark them, circle them, to ask the teacher to explain. Or if the night before, your parents, if you have a classmate you can contact, or someone in study hall. And many times teachers will say at the beginning of class, any questions from last night's homework? Now, if there was something you didn't understand, ask the question. Now, when you're actually getting ready for a test, go back through the homework, redo some of the problems that you have problems with, do some sample problems from each assignment, each section, to get ready for the test. So as you're doing your homework and your quizzes, make sure you make corrections and you get your questions answered for how to do it. And by showing your work on your homework every day, when it's time to prepare for the test, you can see step by step how to do it and correct yourself when you go back and practice for the test. So hopefully you've gotten some tips, good tips on reading your textbook effectively to help you prepare for tests, taking notes more effectively to use color, pictures, and how you format the information on a page that makes sense to you. Also with math, how to prepare for a math test. Now, there are some other strategies, especially when the teacher tells you what kinds of problems are on the test, because it takes a different level of knowledge to write an essay. There's a much more thorough understanding in writing an essay than matching, because all of the terms and the answers are there in front of you in a matching section on a test. So you don't have to know them as thoroughly. If you have a section on fill in the blanks and the choice words are given to you, again, you don't have to have as deep a knowledge or memorization, enough to recognize rather than recall. Recognition is a different kind of memory level than complete recall. You may have a section that is multiple choice. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in test taking. However, again, the multiple choice question, you need to be able to eliminate what obviously doesn't go, as well as be able to connect what does. If you have fill-in-the-blank questions without a word bank or without the choices available, you have to know it at a little bit deeper level, because you have to recall that word, unless it's somewhere else on the test, that you'll see it and go, oh, yeah, that's the word that I couldn't think of. So, again, when we are working to learn, we can work in harmony with our brains work, how our brains work, or we can just work hard and hope for the best. Better to, if you can get that insight into how your brain works, so that you can make it easier and learn the information more effectively, so that you can recall it when needed on the test, whether it's for the class, semester test, standardized test, whether it's a math test, an ACT or an SAT test. So the important part is to really learn and know the information and the strategies that you use with your brain make a difference. Something else that will help in test preparation is if you understand about your multiple intelligence strengths. The SOAR Study Skills book does have a multiple intelligences assessment in the beginning of the book. And once you know what your strengths are, you can use that information in how you are preparing for tests. If you have a strong interpersonal intelligence, for example, about relationships between people, you can use that when you're studying by creating stories with people around the information. If you are unfamiliar with the multiple intelligences, there is a segment in the Spark archives about the eight intelligences to learn more. So you can check that out as well. If you know that you tend to Remember things you see, which many of us do. Make sure that you have images. Talk so you hear yourself. Pretend you're doing a talk show, an interview, have a conversation with a study partner, a parent, a grandparent. Teaching other people is a great way to understand the content yourself. So study groups can be really effective. Plus, study groups are a great way to make up those mnemonics, those rhymes. There are past segments of Spark that deal with magnificent memory, retain it or regain it, strategies called mnemonics for remembering. And there are a number of them. You can use rhyme, like in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue, is one many of us learned. You can use acronyms where the first letter makes up a word, like, well, Roy G. Biv is a name, and that's the colors of the visible light spectrum or the rainbow in order from longest to shortest, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. The things that the brain has no reason to learn. It has nothing to do with survival. Answering those critical brain questions of, can I eat it? Can it eat me? Can I mate with it? Those are critical survival questions. Be able to find your way back home. That's a security question, important to the brain. Who was the third king of England? Not important to survival, not important naturally to the brain. So we have to create artificial meaning in a way that makes it easy to retain. And so we can use these acronyms and acrostics like... one of my favorites actually told you what it did. Well, Pluto is still a planet. My very easy method just shows us nine planets. That's an acrostic, where the first letter of every word of that sentence is something that's in a particular sequence. In this case, it's the order of the planets from the sun to the edge of the solar system, including Pluto, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, Pluto. So the order matters. So it's not just remembering a list, it's also remembering a sequence. And that's why acronyms and acrostics are very helpful. As a biology major as an undergrad, being able to memorize the facial nerves is important. And medical students use these tools as well. On old Olympus towering tops of Finn and German brood some hops. Viewed some hops. So we can make up these stories by ourselves, and usually students are very creative in making up stories and images as you're preparing for a test. If you can relate it to sex, if you're looking at junior high to high school, there's a certain emotion tied to that, and when we add emotion to storing memory, it makes it easier to recall. If we sing it, make it musical or rhythm, rhyme, makes it easier to remember. So that some of you may remember, if you're older, there was an episode of Happy Days where Popsy needed to learn the bones of the body, so he sang them. So when you can put it into a song, you can anchor it in parts of your body. So you can put one piece of information in the palm of your hand, put another one on your elbow, another one on your shoulder. So you can actually visually or touch those parts of the body when you're putting that information there. So there are a number of ways to create artificial connections with content information. Telling stories is also good. I had a very serendipitous event when I was teaching the water cycle in my first teaching position a number of years ago. And I told a story at the beginning of class. And I was also in theater, so I love drama. And this is a Monday morning. So I asked the students if they heard about what happened over the weekend. And then I went and looked out down the hallway and closed the door, and I lowered my voice. I said, you may have noticed that there are some students who are not here today. Now, immediately I have their curiosity, and excuse me, and I said, sometimes we don't know about the consequences of our actions. And so some of them are like, who's not here? And why don't I know what was going on? And so all these questions are going, and I've got their attention. I said, apparently, there was a party over the weekend that was held out in the country. I don't remember what it was called. There was a party over the weekend. And we'll say that it was in the country. And word got out there in this party, and more students were showing up. And the students got rides from each other. They needed transportation to get there, so they were riding with each other. And people, the music was loud. They were dancing, and all sorts of things going on. And one of the neighbors, who lived close enough, was concerned, and we all got late, called the police. So, there were probably some other things going on, because when the police were showing up, the sirens and the students scattered, ran to clotheslines and, got knocked over, tripped on garbage cans and all sorts of things. And some did get away. And there were others who got caught and taken to the police station. Some of them, their parents picked them up. Others of them let them stay in jail overnight. I said, you just learned the water cycle. And they went, and I waited about 10 seconds while they were processing and trying to figure out what I just said. And they went, and so then we went through the water cycle. And I had them draw it on a piece of paper, what I drew on the board, and we labeled this step. From people going directly to the party, which is up in the sky, that was evaporation. More people were showing up. Some people had to get transportation. That was the water that went to the plant, and that's called transpiration up to the sky. Now, as more and more people showed up, the cloud becomes dense and crowded, and the thunder was loud, the volume, and the lightning was the sirens of the police coming. The precipitation was the people running. Runoff is the water that goes off the surface and into the stream. And then some of that water is trapped in groundwater. And that can, a drop of water can be in groundwater for up to 10,000 years, which is a very stiff penalty for a party, don't you think? Now, I will tell you the exciting piece about this is that when they took a quiz, now, in addition to the story, we drew the picture, we labeled the picture, connected it to the story, took a quiz the next day, they had to draw it. Everybody got the pieces. They said, tell the story while you draw in your head. And several people spelled transpiration, but that's okay. Because we did the quiz, and then we, again, on the test, and they got 100%. And even more exciting than that is a year later, when they were in biology class, and the biology teacher said, I'm going to have to reteach you the water cycle. And they said, oh, no, you don't. We know it. And she said, oh, no, because she had taught the class before I was there. So she gave them a quiz. And guess what? Except for a few transportations instead of transpirations, they got the water cycle, all of them. And she came to me and she said, what in the world did you do? I was teaching that for years and I never got that result. Powerful, powerful stories and test prep. Our time is running out. So I will say thank you for listening. I wish you the best of success in your learning. Next week, my guest is Marianne Hess, and we'll be talking about sparks to go from fragile to fabulous. So I invite you to join me and take very good care of this only brain that you have. And the more that you learn to understand it and that you feed it and the nutrients it needs and give it water, you will get amazing results. So until next time, stay safe, have fun as you learn and become even more successful. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Miss Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.